Yes, my name is Chris Butters, and I guess I'd better give you the short version. I grew up in South Africa, took a degree in English and Latin literature, and then architecture. Ended up doing most of that in France for 7 years. And then I ended up in Norway as architect and was doing green design, all the ecological stuff. I also worked as a builder and farmer, so I started off there a little bit. For 10 years I worked in Bhutan, built a hospital. I also did translations from Tibetan and some other funny stuff. And of course, Bhutan is the land of gross national happiness, so there's a lot of environmental philosophy. And there, I ran a national organization on sustainable design in Norway, with a lot of outreach, not just architects, but engineers, housewives, housing associations, ministries, a lot of European networking, sustainable cities. And the last two and a half years, I've been at Warwick in the engineering department on a research program looking at sustainable low-income housing in developing countries. I don't think my interest in it comes from South Africa. I was just a naive little South African who left because I was getting a bit fed up with the old South Africa. So it really happened by chance. I ended up on a farm in France with a bunch of young people who were a little bit into that sort of stuff. Organic farming. We started building solar collectors in about 1975. And one of the ladies left there, and I was the only one who was interested in taking over 2 dozen chickens in an organic garden. So it just kind of happened, and then we got into sustainable building, and it's always simply seemed a natural place to be. Bhutan taught me a lot. It happened because my ex-wife was also an architect, Norwegian, got a UNESCO posting there, so I said, I'll go along. So I was looking after the little kids at home, and then I started getting jobs for UNICEF, and then I took over the main job. I wrote a book about Bhutan. I was doing translations from Tibetan, and then did this hospital. Bhutan is really special. They don't depend on the outside world in a way. They're very proud of their culture. I think the biggest difference was one of time. You know, time is a lot looser in those countries. We're always running after the clock. And in one way, you can say those countries are very inefficient, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, we tend to get terribly impatient, but things kind of work. And while I was there, I was coming back to Norway more or less every year to teach there. And I started talking about overdevelopment. In other words, you know, we talk about peak oil, peak soil, and somewhere around the mid-70s, we all had, you know, 2 cars, 3 fridges, 1.5 televisions. We all had that stuff. And since then, in a way, we're over the top. We're getting stressed. We're getting obesity. There's all that stuff. And in a way, I think we're in a state of overdevelopment. And that's, I think, one of the lessons Bhutan made me think about. Well, one has to be careful not to get romantic, you know. Life is a struggle. You know, they don't live very long. They tend to have a very limited diet. There are all kinds of things like that. On the other hand, they have a traditional attitude towards environment, which a lot of our old cultures had not very long ago. And if they can develop that into what you might call a more sort of modern form of eco-philosophy, if you like, and they're trying to do that very consciously, then very good basis. Whereas in Norway, for example, which had exactly the same values in the old farmer culture, again, overdevelopment, we've seen that sort of start to crumble and get cracks in the sort of yuppie age of the 80s and the 90s and conspicuous consumption, and all those old values are seriously under threat in our society. If we look at different countries, some of them may be more sustainable simply because they're less developed and they're more farming communities. Or for example, the Swiss, they make things like chocolate and watches, which take very little energy, whereas other people are making aluminium and cement. So that's that side of it. But if you think of sustainability more in terms of human development, to some extent, I don't think we can really talk about countries. We talk about the North and the South and so on, but you've got loads of people in America or in Britain who are living a fairly eco life. And down in Africa, you've got a little group at the top who have 3 Mercedes-Benzes and are wasting stuff all over the place and have a huge footprint. I mean, certainly you can look at places like Bhutan because the official policy is slow and careful sustainable development. They really are a bit special in that sense. The countries like South Africa that have a really, really good constitution, you know, things like gender, human rights, but in practice they're struggling and there's a lot of corruption. Norway has a wonderful constitution and is doing a lot in terms of environment. On the other hand, they're pumping up a hell of a lot of oil. So it's hard to say. The Gaia Group started with our students at the Oslo School of Architecture, who were pretty much in a revolt against all the other professors, and we as teachers supported them. So then we started Gaia as a little green architecture group, and in the beginning of the 80s, and by the beginning of the 90s, we formed a little Gaia international network of people in Germany, Scotland, Denmark, Australia. So it's kind of an informal network which, I mean, we like to say that we're working on the really deep green end. We talk about deep green, light green, grey and black, if you like. So we never got rich, and we've tried to stay away from commercialization in a way. But we've always had enough to do. And there are, you know, there are permaculture people, there are interior designers. It's a little group, it's not big. But I think we've had quite a lot of influence, at least in a little circle. Well, one that's going on now in Norway with something called active house. You've got all these passive houses coming out of Germany, very, very low energy houses. But they still rely on mechanical ventilation, and they can be full of suspicious materials, toxic materials. So we're trying to work with natural materials, natural ventilation, and we're getting down to the same very low energy standards without mechanical ventilation, which according to all the experts and engineers is impossible. And we're doing it. And suddenly it's taken off, and about 50 of them have been built. They're simple timber houses, very practical, very low energy, and very healthy. I think, well, my way of putting the Gaia motto is saying that we want to build buildings and environments which are healthy for people and for the planet. While working with this stuff, I started to see there are all kinds of systems for evaluating, and some of them are incredibly technocratic, and you've got to do loads of number crunching, and a lot of them are not systematic. I was looking at one just yesterday, which is in Scotland, about placemaking, but it developed from the NHS side, from the health side. And they've got lots of parameters in their little graph which have to do with well-being and what you might call the social side of sustainability, and almost nothing about the environmental economic. So what I did with Value Map was try to put all those three all on one very easy-to-read thing. It can be used by experts, but the main point is it can be used by anyone in a very simple way. And if you like, you're talking about social qualities, ecological qualities, and economic qualities. And by economics, we're talking about the whole organization. It's not just about money. And so you talk about qualities and quantities. You know, you're talking about kilowatt hours and things you can number crunch. And on the other side, you're talking about security, aesthetics. And we have to talk about those things because they are part of decision making. And that forces specialists to see the connections and the trade-offs between those three areas. And number crunch, they say, well, you can't, you know, compare apples and oranges. You can't compare qualities and quantities, but we have to. And if you're doing quantities, you can say, well, you know, a house that's using less than 40 kilowatt hours per square meter per year is excellent. If you're looking at the social qualities, then the people are the experts. And if you ask people, do you feel secure in this housing area? And that's your answer, because they're the experts. It forces specialists not to think like specialists. And it empowers the people who aren't specialists. And it forces people to see the links. In some ways, I don't do too badly. I'm not a consumer. I recycle, I don't waste. I have a tiny little house in Norway. I'm quite happy to have 18 degrees indoors, unless I'm feeling miserable, which, you know, I do like a bit of chocolate now and again. I have a car, but I almost never use it. Go by bus. Where a lot of us fall down is the traveling, the international traveling. And you could say, to some extent, I have a bit of an excuse because I am a researcher. I have a family in Norway. I've got another family in South Africa. But the travelling is the big one. I'm not brilliant, but I think it's partly the attitude of high consumption, which is our main problem. You know, for people starting in this direction, it sometimes is difficult to find the right information. For example, what forms of organic food are really going to improve your footprint? It's not always obvious. Sometimes the information is confusing, but I think it's got a lot to do with a healthier life in a way. You save a lot of money if you eat less meat. You save a lot of money if you don't have a car, in fact. So I think there are lots of ways one can start to do it. But of course, you've got to start by looking around and getting the information and filtering the information, because some of it's not very good. But try to join the dots, really, between ecology, economy, and the social side. And that's really what a transdisciplinary approach or education is all about.
This podcast was recorded and edited by Andemil Nid. Music by Bensound.